is Jimmy Powers, and happy to be coming your way with another Grantland Rice story. Hello again, this is Jimmy Powers, transcribed with another chapter from the colorful keys of Granny Rice's famous typewriter, the one that beat out the history of headline American sports for more than half a century. Today we meet Gene Tunney, the man whose entire dedication in life was spelled in two words, Jack Dempsey. Gene Tunney, typified by Granny as a study in concentration and dedication. So, with a salute to the ever-young spirit of Granny Rice, I take up his autobiography, The Tumult and the Shouting, and in first person, pick up the narrative. I vividly recall the first time I met Tunney. The New York Giants were playing at home, and Haywood Bruin and I were in the press box at the Polo Grounds. Walter Trumbull, sports editor of the old New York Post, appeared in our midst with a young fellow in tow. His name? Gene Tunney. Bruin made quite a fuss over the handsome youngster. "What are your plans?" I asked. "My plans are all Dempsey," he replied. "Very interesting," I said. "But why not sharpen your artillery on Harry Greb, Carpentier, or Tom Gibbons before you start hollering for Dempsey?" "I suppose I'll have to beat them on the way up," Tunney said, "but Dempsey is the one I want." I said no more and turned my attention back to McGraw's Giants. I recall Tunney later volunteered that he was 23 years old. I couldn't help thinking that this forthright young fellow would make a fine insurance salesman, but certainly had no business having his features and brains scrambled by Dempsey's steel fists. In January of 1922, Tunney defeated Battling Levinsky for the light heavy crown, but lost it the following May to Harry Greb. It was the bloodiest fight I ever covered. A great fighter, or brawler, Greb handled Tunney like a butcher hammering a steak. Less than a year later, they fought again, and Tunney won the decision in 15 rounds. In 1924, he knocked out Carpentier in 15 rounds and dispatched Tom Gibbons in 12 rounds in 25. After defeating a string of other tough babies like Jimmy Delaney, Martin Burke, Chuck Wiggins, Tommy Loughran, and Johnny Risco, Tunney again camped on Dempsey's trail. That winter in Florida, I played golf with Tommy Armour and Tunney. Gene would hit his drive, toss aside his club, and run down the fairway throwing phantom punches, left and right hooks, and muttering, "Dempsey, Dempsey, Dempsey." "He's obsessed," observed Armour. "His brain knows nothing but Dempsey." I should have gone along much stronger with Tommy's hunch. At any rate, soon after his Florida holiday, Gene went to Hollywood to make a picture called The Fighting Marine. He didn't allow the grease paint and glitter to confuse him or his training. Each afternoon, he'd work at the Hollywood AC, where Harry Grayson, now NEA's sports editor, got to know him. An ex-Marine himself, Harry spent a lot of time with Tunney, and the more Harry saw, the more he liked Gene. 6 months before the fight, Grayson picked Tunney to beat Dempsey. He never recanted. Matter of fact, Grayson was the only fight writer in America to go overboard on Tunney. We all thought he was crazy, but that didn't faze Harry a bit. Municipal Stadium, Philadelphia, was selected as the site of that first Dempsey-Tunney fight. The date? September the 3rd, 1926. During those roaring 20s, fight camps were colorful, with the heavyweights camp handling more daily paying customers than the average TV fight of today. The Tribune had Bill McGeehan, Fred Hawthorne, and Harry Cross beating out copy, stethoscoping Tunney's scholarly breathing, and blueprinting Dempsey's primeval snorting. Tunney went into heavy training at Speculator, New York, about 40 miles west of Saratoga. His camp was pitched near a small river and gorgeous scenery. Ring Lardner and I went up for a visit. He looked wonderful. As for Dempsey, banging away behind closed doors at Badar Field, well, he didn't look like the Dempsey of the Firpo fight 4 years earlier. Wealth, opulence, a bride, and revamped nose hadn't exactly brought Jack anything approaching soul comfort. Also, he was in a legal battle with his old manager, Jack Kearns. 2 days before the fight, the sports section of the Sunday Tribune went 10 solid pages. The Tribune's owner-publisher, Ogden Reed, was amazed. As the paper was going to bed Saturday night, Reed said, "Say, you're making the Tribune more of a sports paper than anything else. You could do worse, I replied, trying to manage a straight face. With a crowd of 135,000 contributing to the first $2 million gate, Gene Tunney, a superbly cool and efficient boxer, marched out of his corner at the opening bell and hit Dempsey, the fighter, with a high, hard right hand. That blow sealed Dempsey's doom. It started to rain in the fourth round, and by the tenth and final round, it was a deluge. At the end, Dempsey's face was a bloody, horribly beaten mask that Tunney had torn up like a plowed field. Speed of foot, a sharp jab, and a right cross that ripped Dempsey's face like a can opener were going for Tunney that night against a man who, despite a rocky training period, had been installed a 4 and 5 to 1 favorite. Tunney, at 29, had arrived on his toes. Dempsey, at 31, departed flat-footed. Dempsey had never been knocked out, but had the fight gone 15 rounds, the referee would have had to stop it. Blinded by the final bell, Dempsey grabbed one of his seconds and said, "Take me to him. I want to shake his hand." It's fine to help build a champion, but when his time comes to step down, as it always will, it's unpleasant to tear him down and bury him. I had intended to give Tunney a fitting tribute in my overnight story that historical night and go as easy on Dempsey as I possibly could, but I did neither. Due to the rain, it was impossible to use a typewriter, so I dictated the description of the fight to my wireman. With me that night were Ring Lardner and Benny Leonard, the ex-lightweight champion. Back at the hotel, a raging sore throat and too little sleep had me in bad shape. "I'll file your overnight," said Lardner. Leonard, a Dempsey man, told Lardner that he suspected the fix had been in for Tunney to win. The story, appearing next day under my byline, blistered the hide off both Tunney and Dempsey. Neither spoke to me for several months. I couldn't blame either, but I couldn't open my mouth. I'd had a ghost. Now, as Jimmy Powers once again, I'd like to introduce you to the only fight writer in America to pick Gene Tunney over Jack Dempsey in their first fight. Harry Grayson, it's nice to see you.
Great to be here, Jimmy, especially because it had to do with Grant and Rice.
Mm-hmm. He was quite a guy, wasn't he? Harry, you're the sports editor of NEA. How many papers do you service?
We service about 800, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. United States and Canada?
Philippines, South America, Venezuela.
Good. Harry, you heard from Granny's narrative on Tunney that you were the only major fight writer in America who liked Tunney sufficiently to pick him against Dempsey in their Philadelphia fight. What were the circumstances of that pick?
Well, Jimmy, it was this way. In the first place, Dempsey hadn't boxed in 3 years. I was very close to Jack and still am. And Tunney came to Los Angeles early in 1926 to make a picture. Billy Gibson was with him. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ever saw Gene Tunney was in the gymnasium of the Hollywood Athletic Club. Mm-hmm. And I liked his looks. I liked his chin. I watched him work out. He didn't box. He shadow boxed and he punched a bag. And he asked me, he said, "Harry, you know Dempsey well. Do you think I have a chance?" And I said, "Certain you've got a chance." The more I thought of Tunney, the better I liked him. I figured, here's a fellow licked Harry Greb. And anybody can lick Greb can lick anybody. And then the more I saw him in workouts, I liked the color of his skin. I liked the way he moved. I liked his jab. I knew he was a dead game guy. He couldn't gone that first 15 rounds with Greb. And I just kept piling this on until I finally picked him. I remember my lead. Tonight, Gene Tunney will win every second of every minute of every round from Jack Dempsey and might knock him out in the first round, and he nearly did.
He did. Harry Grayson, you've seen a lot of fighters through the years. You must have had some pets in addition to Tunney, just as Grant Rice did in his great book, The Tumult and the Shouting. Who were some of your favorite fighters in other divisions besides heavyweight, perhaps?
My favorite fighters down through the years were Benny Leonard, who was the greatest manufactured fighter I ever saw. Oh, I think another favorite of mine was Ace Hudkins. I always admired his courage. He should have been the middleweight champion. I thought he beat Walker both times, but he didn't get the decision. But Hudkins just relished fighting.
How about Mickey Walker? There's another great fighter, wasn't he?
He was a great fighter. Greb was a great fighter. I thought one of the greatest fights I ever saw was Greb and Walker. Abe Attell must have been a great fighter.
Well, that's not only your opinion, it's his as well. Abe was convinced he was the greatest.
Well, he was all right. I'll tell you one quick story. I think it was the greatest compliment I ever paid to anybody. And we were talking at Madison Square Garden about Jim Driscoll, who must have been a wonder, too. And we talked, these fight managers, and there was a fellow from England here. And they talked to Jim Driscoll all afternoon and way into the evening. And everybody agreed that Jim Driscoll was the greatest fighter they'd ever seen. And just about that time, in walked old Charlie Harvey, who managed Jim Driscoll. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, here's a fellow who should know. I said, Charlie, who was the greatest fighter you ever saw? And the old man stood for a second and said, the greatest fighter I ever saw beyond any question of doubt was Abe Attell.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Harry Grayson. And that's it for today, folks. Until next time, this is Jimmy Powers, transcribed, saying hasta la vista.